Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and we are going to today learn Perek Vav of Melachim Aleph, the sixth chapter of Melachim Aleph. Odeh v'lo evosh, I will freely admit that I find Prakim Vav and Zayin of Melachim very difficult and largely uninteresting, I'm sorry to say. Not interesting in and of themselves, except that they are trying to describe for us the construction of the Beit HaMikdash and of Shlomo HaMelech's house. And I find that the instructions given in the text are insufficient to give us a full picture of what it looks like. Rashi and Radak and other Mefarshim struggle mightily to explain the words. The descriptions are also not simple and obvious. I will do some of that to the best of my ability. They're also fairly long prakim, so that in a lot of time it's not so easy to do it. And also, and it just happens to be that there are other issues that arise that I find personally more interesting. So we will do our best, and we'll see how it goes. Perek opens up by saying, "Vahibishmonim shana ve'arba meot shana letzit bnei Yisrael me'aret Yitzrayim b'shana harivit b'chodesh ziv hu achodesh hasheni l'mloch Shlomo al Yisrael va'even habayit l'Hashem." So this is a pasuk that says, in the 480th year after the Jews left Egypt, in the fourth year, presumably in the fourth year of Shlomo's reign, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month of the year, so the general consensus, that means it's Iyar, right? The month we call Iyar, Nisan Iyar, we'll get back to that in a second, of Shlomo ruling, the fourth year of Shlomo ruling, as the Radak points out, the fourth year of his ruling, he builds the Bayit for Hashem, he builds the Beit HaMikdash. So a couple of points. By now I think it's fairly well known, but it is striking that the Perek here, uncharacteristically for the book of Melachim, relates this event back to the experience of Yitziat Mitzrayim. What's striking about that is that we don't generally relate events all the way back to Yitziat Mitzrayim, when kings rule, when things happen. So it happening here is noticeable. I think the simple answer that's generally given is that this reminds us that the building of the Beit HaMikdash is in fact seen as the culmination, as the completion of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And the Yitziat Mitzrayim was not in fact complete until such time as a Beit HaMikdash was built. And that's why all of a sudden we remind ourselves it was the 480th year after the Jews left Egypt, that was when Yitziat Mitzrayim actually came to its full fruition. This is something you can also notice if you just pay attention to Seder night, to the Song of Dayenu. The Song of Dayenu is instructive in that way as well, because while it lists mostly things that happen in the context of Yitziat Mitzrayim, it then goes to the splitting of the sea, which is also reflected in the discussion of how many makot the Egyptians suffered at the sea that we also do in the Haggadah. It mentions the giving of the Torah, it mentions getting to Eretz Yisrael, and it mentions the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and that's where Dayenu ends, again signaling us that while we on Pesach night are celebrating the Exodus itself, the physical event, it doesn't fully complete, it doesn't fully finish until the building of this structure that we're talking about now, the Beit HaMikdash, and that's what's going on here in the Pasuk. Second point about this Pasuk is that it refers to the month as Chodesh Ziv, which is the second month. So that's the month of Iyar. That is important or interesting to Chazal in two different ways. One is, Gemara in Rosh Hashanah points out that this ratifies what the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah there thinks, that Jewish kings would count their reigns from the month of Nisan, no matter when they actually took reign. So if the old king passed away or abdicated or whatever happened in the middle of a year, come the next Nisan, they would count it again as the next year for the king. It would already be his second year. And that's why Ziv, or Iyar, is going to be the second month. In addition, you have the interesting phenomenon, which comes up a couple of times in Tanakh, of noting to us that there were some names for the months, even before the Jews went into exile in Bavel. We generally assume, or we generally know, that the months that we have are months that the Jews brought back with them from the Babylonian exile. They are Babylonian names for months. Before that, the assumption sometimes is that we counted the months by number. There is even the possibility that might be a mitzvah d'oraita from the mitzvah v'chodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodashim, that Nisan is supposed to be the first month of the year, might not only be first in terms of king's reigns, but it might be that are supposed to be first in terms of we should count every month as second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever it is, to Nisan. Here is an example of where, even if they did that, they might also have had names for the months. Chodesh Ziv is assumed to be Chodesh Ziv for one of two reasons. One reason in Chazal that's given is, and this is quoted by the Mefarshim there, by Rashi, Radak, and the other Mefarshim, is that Ziv means to shine, and it's the month when the flowers and the trees are getting the sun shining on them, because it's already firmly spring, and that's the month of Ziv. Another possibility mentioned in Gemara Rosh Hashanah Yud Aleph Amud Aleph is that it was the month when Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were born, and they produced the shining for the entire world. And that would be another sort of way to make this the month of shining. It's not now natural sun shining, but the metaphysical shining of the Avot having been born in that time. So this is the month, and this is the setting for when Shlomo builds the Bayit. Pasuk Bet says, V'habayit asher bana ha-melech Shlomo la-Hashem, shishim ama orko, ve'esrim rochbo, u'shloshim ama komato. It was 60 amot long, 30 amot wide, and 30 amot high. So depending on how you envision an ama today is assumed to be somewhere between 1.5 to perhaps as much as 2 feet. So depending on what we want to measure for, we measure it in different ways, but somewhere in there. So 30 amot is somewhere between 45 and 60 feet high, which is a fairly high structure. And this is where the Beit HaMikdash was built back then. These are not the dimensions of the Mishkan in the Midbar. When Shlomo HaMelech comes to build the Beit HaMikdash, he apparently already knows, and this is widely assumed after he does it, but it wasn't absolutely necessary that it had to be that way. He already seems to know that the dimensions of the Mishkan were not the dimensions of what had to be true. They were dimensions of what Hashem said should be true in the Midbar, in the desert. But that when it came time to build a different structure, probably more permanent structure, when it came time for that, so that already was something that did not have to be governed by those same rules, and therefore Shlomo had the freedom to build a bigger house. The size of it, again, I've been stressing or thinking about or noticing issues of Shlomo HaMelech focusing on size and impressiveness and things like that. So here, there's a Gemara that makes that interesting point as well. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Dav Zayin points out a common popular saying that would say that when a young couple are in love, so the amount of space they need to sleep together, I don't mean to sleep together conjugally, just to actually physically be on the same beds together, is very small. And when they lose some of that love, so then all of a sudden their needs, their sleep needs, become much bigger, much wider, and they need a much larger space just to feel comfortable in. That's what the Gemara says, that's what people claim. And then Rav Huna comes along and he says, I have psukim that show it as well, the same idea. So the idea is not about the marital physical relationship. The idea is about the question of how does our emotional interaction with each other affect our ability to physically feel comfortable with each other in different kinds of ways. So the Gemara then, Rav Huna is going to apply it to the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. Rav Huna says, Kroi ktive. Meikar ktiv, originally, when Hashem comes to rest the divine presence among the Jewish people, so Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, V'no adti v'cha sham v'dibarti itcha me'al ha-kaporet. That when you build the Mishkan, I will speak to you from above the kaporet, and the kaporet was 10 tfachim high. So it shows you that Hashem sort of was able to descend, or not able to, but Hashem descended to within 10 tfachim, and that was a place that could hold Hashem. Comes now to Melachim Aleph, we see this house which is 30 amot high, and then in Yeshaya, when Yeshaya was going to complain about the Jewish people and their relationship with God, he says at the very end of the Sefer, he says, Komar, Hashem, Hashemayim, Kisi, V'arat, Adam, Raglai, Ezebay, Deshativ, Nuli, what kind of a house can you build me that would contain me? Now, in the context of Yeshaya, that's a complaint because the Jews seem to think they can control God through the Beit HaMikdash, and that might be more exactly what Yeshaya was complaining about. But the point that the Rav Huna is making is you see that the context of physical space becomes more problematic as time goes on, as the relationship between the Jewish people and God lessens and becomes more problematic. I find that interesting again because I've been noticing that Shlomo HaMelech, when he comes to build something, wants to build a structure that is magnificent and huge. And there's a value to that, and there's an impressiveness to that, and there's a point to that. But at least this Gemara is suggesting that for all that that may be true, there's a flip side to it in that it does suggest or reveal that the relationship between God and Jewish people is not quite as intimate as it once was. That's always a question in terms of shuls and things like that and Beit HaMikdash, right? To some extent, if you had a community that was completely impoverished and they used folding chairs and they have flaking walls and they have this, but they're doing their best in terms of Avodas Hashem and davening to Hashem, it could be a base of Knesset's Letiferet. But on the other hand, you can have structures that cost millions and millions of dollars to build, and they're huge and they're magnificent, and yet the Avodas Hashem inside is severely limited and flawed. So here too, I think the Gemara is pointing that out in terms of this, and Shlomo's Beit HaMikdash is a step along the way. Although it didn't have to turn out that way, Rav Huna is speaking with the hindsight of history. Okay, so this is the Bayit. Now the parak goes on into greater detail. So Pasuk Gimel, V'haulam al-pnei heichal ha-bayit, asrim ama orko, al-pnei rochav ha-bayit, eser ba'ama rochbo al-pnei ha-bayit. When you came into the Beit HaMikdash, there was an opening area, an ulam, that was, its length was 20 amot, but the length, its length was on the, towards the width of the bayit, meaning it was sort of an entryway that was wider than the rest of the house, of the Beit HaMikdash. It was 20 amot wide and 10 amot deep. So we would have said, in terms of the length of the Beit HaMikdash, it was 10 amot long, but that's what it was. Vayas labayit chalonei shkufim atumim. And he also made for the bayit, he made windows. So shkufim atumim is that they were wide on the outside and narrow on the inside. Gemara Menachot points that out and notices that. And notes that the point of the windows wasn't to provide light inside the structure. And that's why Shlomo HaMelech made them that way. Ordinarily in their times, our windows are the same width. They're just thin pieces of glass. Not thin or thick pieces of glass, but there's no difference in width. But in those times, what you generally did with windows was you made them narrower on the outside and wider on the inside so that the light that came through them would disperse inside the house and provide the maximum white light for the minimum exposure. You wanted to minimize the exposure because it would produce cold. But Shlomo did it in the reverse. And the point was that the windows were there purely for beauty. They were not there, in fact, for light, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't need light, because Hashem can provide light however Hashem wants to provide light. And that had nothing to do with what was going on here. These were decorative, completely decorative. Okay? Pasuk. Hey. Vayivan al kira bayit yatsia saviv et kirot bayit saviv leichav ladvir vayas tzlaut saviv. So, Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beit HaMikdash, but there's like a secondary structure, a side structure around it, against the houses, against the Beit HaMikdash itself, against the Kodesh, and there are Yitziah is and Slaot, there are different chambers and different side rooms. So in Pasuk Vav, Yitziah Tachtona Chamesh Bama Rochba, Vatichona Shesh Bama Rochba, Vashleshit Sheva Bama Rochba. And in these side structures, the bottom floor was 5 amot wide, the next floor was 6 amot wide, the top floor was 7 amot wide. Kimigro natan labayit saviv chutzal levilti achol bekirot habayit, and Shlomo HaMelech had left open areas in the outside of the Beit HaMikdash so that you wouldn't see beams within the Beit HaMikdash. So you didn't see the structure itself. It would sort of be like today making sure the wiring is inside the wall. So here too there's this phantom structure that's not really the Beit HaMikdash itself, but it is helping to allow for things to be happening and to have chambers and walls and passageways that you can get from one place to the other. Pasuk Zayin, V'abayit bihi banoto, Evin shlema masag nivna, it was built with complete stones, U'makavot v'agarzen kol kli barzel, no metal tools were heard being used, Lo nishma b'abayit bihi banoto, were not heard at all in the Beit HaMikdash when it was being built. So there is this tradition in Chazal that I've mentioned before, that Shlomo HaMelech found the Shamir. The Shamir is this worm that was assumed to be able to hew stones, to cut them without any kind of a metal. and that was being assumed here. But I would also notice that here we're starting to talk about the stones. Other Gemaras suggest that Shlomo Melech just found stones that were large and small and could create the appearance of fullness. But we're talking about stones, and yet, if you remember from last parak, when he talks to Hiram about what he's going to get from him, he's getting a lot of wood as well. And if we just follow the parak, we'll see there's a lot of wood being used as well. We'll have to talk about that in a second. Pasuk Chet. Petach atzela tichuna al ketav abayit hayamanit, uvlulim ya'alu al tichuna, u'yitichuna el hashalishim. There's a door for this middle tzela, this middle room, on the right side of the Beit HaMikdash, and then there were winding stairs to the middle level, and then to the third level. Vayivin et abayit vayichalei, he builds the house and he finishes it. Vayispon et abayit gevim usderot ba'arazim. He covers the bayit with beams to hold it up, and with boards of cedar. Sderot ba'arazim. Remember all the wood that he bought from Hiram. Part of the reason why I stressed the wood is that one of the things that always bothered me was how the Beit HaMikdash got burned. Right? Tisha B'Av, we mourn the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and we say it's burned. It was burned. So how do you burn the Beit HaMikdash if it's built of stone? Right? You look today at the Kotel Maravi, it's all stone. So I once asked the tour guide in Israel that question. He said, well, if you burn stone, what it does is it reduces the, evaporates any moisture within the stone, and therefore the stones, if they're supporting a lot of weight and they're arched, they will collapse, and that will bring the whole structure down, and you'll get a pile of rubble. And that may be true, but it doesn't quite explain the idea of a burning of a Beit HaMikdash that would last for, as the Gemara has it, for 24 hours perhaps. Except here we see that Shlomo Melech is building the house, so some of it is stone, much of it is stone, but there's also much of it that is cedar, that is wood, and the wood, of course, would burn. Pasuk Yud, Vayivin al-Yetziah al-Kol HaBayit, he builds this side structure around the whole house, Chamesh Amot Komato, it's 5 cubits high, Vayachozet HaBayit Batzei Razim, and it rested on the house with cedar wood. So that's where you have a huge amount of cedar that could eventually, sadly, be burned when the time comes and the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. Vayidvar Hashem Shlomo. The more that Hashem comes to Shlomo and speaks to Shlomo, here it doesn't say that Hashem comes to Shlomo himself. It's probably through a Navi. Habayit hazeh asher ata voneh im telech bechukotai v'shutai ta'aseh v'shamarti kol mitzvotai lelecha bahem. So Hashem emphasizes through his Navi will be the theme of almost all of Tanakh. It's a theme that is hard to latch onto, that people have a great difficulty with. The simple theme that this house that you're building, its survival, like the survival of the monarchy of David HaMelech, is dependent on following God's laws and doing God's judgments, keeping all the ways to go in them. Then I'll keep my word to you. And what I spoke to David HaMelech, and I'll live among the Jewish people, I'll reside here, whatever that means, and never leave the Jewish people. This continuing reminder that we will see Shlomo will fail to keep, and that all throughout Jewish history, people will fail to keep. It's not the structure, it's not the action, it's not the specific ritual that you choose to emphasize as being the center of Avodas Hashem, it's the whole picture. In any case, Pasuk Yudal goes on with the parak, Vayivin Shlomo at Abayit Vayichalehu, he builds the house, he completes it, Vayivin Kibbut Abayit, Mibaita Mitzalot Arazim, Mikarka Habayit, Ad Kirota Sipun, Sipa Eitz Mibayit, Vaitzavar Karka Habayit, Mitzalot Biroshim. So he builds the walls with the cedar from the floor to the walls of the ceiling. On the inside they have the wood, and then they also have Mitzalot Biroshim, cypress wood. Vaivin et Asrim Amma, Minyakite Habayit, Mitzalot Arazim, Minyakarka Arakirot. So that's going to give you the measurements, and the Mepharshim struggle with how these measurements work. There are different options. I think that unless you're going to sit with a picture and draw the picture, and I can't do that verbally, it's very difficult. So I will read and translate to the best of my ability, but I make no claim to really have a full understanding of any of this. So even at Esrim Amam Minyakite Abayit Mitzalot Arazim Minakarka Arakirot, he builds it 20 amot from the floor
to the walls, right? So Rashi thinks here. So Rashi just says, "Katav klomar shein misofa ichal v'hala," or "kaf shein misofa ichal v'hala." 20 amod from the end of the hichal and beyond. And the other 20 are different. So Rashi's understanding it as being towards the length of the house and of the bayit and the way it's working, whereas Radak thinks that it's the sides of the house. Talking about the side structure and building that way. Also, we're with this cedar wood, and he builds beyond the bayit into the Kodesh Kodeshim. And there were 40 amot of the bayit itself, right after the ulam. You have 40 amot of the bayit itself. The erez of the bayit pnima miklaat pikaim uftrei tzitzim akol erez ein even nireh. So my English says, and the cedars of the house was carved with colocynths and open flowers. Question is what these English words, what these Hebrew words mean, what the English words mean. It's simply difficult. So the Radak says, "Kvasek klaim pekaim." They are pictures. Quote tzadeh umiklat pekaim samukl pekaim. It's drawings on the inside of the house for beauty, and it's all erez inside. It's all wood inside. You couldn't see any stone. Inside that, there was an inner wall where he placed the Aron. So the space before that Aron place was 20 amot long, 20 amot wide, 20 amot high, and he overlays it with gold. It's a peuzav sagor, so it's wood, but it's overlaid in gold. And he also makes an altar, which he overlays with gold as well. It's a mizbeach eres, which he overlays with cedar. So you've got the mizbeach that you have inside the Beit HaMikdash. That's the mizbeach haktored, and he overlays that with cedar. Vayitzav shlomo et hazahav mipnima saviv zahav sagor, vayyaber biratukot zahav v'pnei advir, vayitzapehu zahav. He overlays the house within with gold, and then he has chains of gold. He overlays that with gold as well. They call a bayit tipa zahav, a tom call a bayit v'chol mizbeach shel levit tipa zahav. Everything is overlaid with gold, again, to look beautiful and to look wealthy and look magnificent, as appropriate for the Beit HaMikdash. V'yasav v'advir shnei kruvim atzei shaman eser amot kumato. He makes extra kruvim. These are not the kruvim that are on top of the Aron Kodesh. They were standing kruvim that are 10 amot tall. They are themselves as tall as the whole Aron with its own kruvim. He makes new kruvim. Another example of Shlomo HaMelech assuming that the model of the Mishkan and the Midbar was a minimal model, but was not the sole model of what you were allowed to do. Pasuk Chav Dalet, V'chamesh Amot Kenaf Karuv Ha'achat, V'chamesh Amot Kenaf Karuv Ha'shenit, Esra Amot Mitzok Knafav Ha'kitzok Knafav. There are 10 Amot from one end of the wings of the kruvim to the other. The two kruvim have the exact same measurements, and they're 10 amot high, and so too the second kruv. That's pasuk chavav. He puts the kruvim, in the kodesh kodashim, and they spread their wings. So when they spread their wings, one kruv touches one back wall. The other kruv's wings touch the other back wall because between them they have 20 amot. V'chanfeim al-toka bayit, they have a second set of wings that turn inwards towards the house. V'chanfeim toka bayit, and that is nogot kanaf el kanaf, and those touch each other. So it seems like it's two sets of wings, one of which face backwards and one of which face forwards. There is a tradition in Chazal, I believe, that says... No, never mind. So they have two sets of wings, one of which touch the back walls, and one of which touch each other. Pasuk Chav Chet, Vayitzav HaKeruvim Zahav, and he covers them with gold as well. Ve'kol Kirot HaBayit, Masav Kala, Pituchei Mikla'ot Keruvim V'timorot, Uftirei Tetzim Lifnim V'Lachitzon. And he carves all the walls of the house around it with various figures. There were Keruvim, there were trees, there were flowers, in all of the areas, where the open areas, the closed areas, wherever people could or cannot be, there was beautiful carvings in the walls as well. Ve'karka HaBayit Tzipa Zahav, the floor of the Beit HaMikdash, he covered with gold, lifnima v'lachitzon, again, in the inner and the outer places. Ve'petach advir asa daltot atzei shamen, ha'ayel mezuzot kamishit. And the place where you go into the dvir, into the Aron, into the Kodesh Kodeshim, he made wood doors of olive wood, and there were a hard phrase, mezuzot kamishit, it seems like there were five sides to getting in. So for example, Rashi says mezuzot kamishit mishtana echad, the mezuzot mikan mikan is two on each side, so it's three, meaning there's the floor, the lintel that you step on, then the doorposts, then the mashkof shalav had like two on it, so that would make it five. So something like mezuzot kamishit, he made it in a way there are five entry linings. Ushtei daltot atzei shemen v'kalale hen miklot kruvim v'timorot uftirei tzitzim v'tzipa zahav. There are two doors of olive wood, and he also makes drawings on them of kruvim, of these angels, and of timorot and uftirei tzitzim, palm trees and flowers, and he covers that in gold as well. Vayered Vayared ala kruvim al timorot et azahav, and then onto these carvings he puts more gold to cover them over in gold. Pasuk lamed gimel v'chein asal lepetach haichal mezuzot atzei shamen me'eit revi'it, and he makes doorways like that as well in the other part of the Beit HaMikdash, and these were four sided. ושתי דלתות עצי וראשים, שני צלעים, הדלת האחד גלילים, ושני כלאים, הדלת השני גלילים. And then he makes two more doors of cypress wood, and then the doors had folding leaves, that שני צלעים, הדלת האחד גלילים. Meaning you could fold them back on each other. You didn't have to just open or close. You could also fold them back on each other. וקלה קירובים מתימורות ופטורי ציצים וטיפה זהב מיושר על המחוקה. And he also makes these same carvings on these doors, and he drips gold into them, and he goldifies them, however the right word is for that. ואיבן אל החצר הפנימית שלושה טורי גזית וטור קירוטות ארזים. And he has an inner court for the Beit HaMikdash, and it's got rows of columns. And here it's hewn stone. It's called Gazit. It's not the Mikdash itself. It's just a courtyard. But he's also got a column of cut cedar beams. So this is all the description of the house that we have. Vashana ha-revi'it yusad beit Hashem be'erach ziv. And in the fourth year, the house is, the foundations are laid in the month of Ziv. Vashana ha-achad esrei be'erach bul. And in the 11th year, so 7 years later, in the month of Bul. So Bul is assumed to be the month of Cheshvan. Bul is assumed to be the month of Cheshvan, so it's from Iyar to Cheshvan, so it's like 7.5 years. V'shana achat asrei be'erach Bul hu achodesh hashemini kala habayit l'chol devarav v'chol mishpatav in all of its ways v'yivneu sheva shanim. So it's 7 years of building this magnificent structure. We're going to see in Prakim Zion, in Perek Zion, that this is all the outer structure that we're talking about. But there's much of the inner work that's going to still be done that is not timed in the same way. So it takes 7 years to build all of these outer structures that we have. So there in Perek Zion you have at least some kind of a minimal description of the way the building of the Beit HaMikdash went. And tomorrow in Perek Zion we will see more of Shlomo's building of his own house, as well as more details of the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Have a good day.